Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Hey, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 259. If you have popped over to the Nerdist channel recently at youtube.com/Nerdist, you would see the Ben Folds 5 video for their new song, Do It Anyway, their first new stuff in like 13 years. It's an amazing song. You can get the album pretty much anywhere, because that's how the internet works. So it's Ben Folds, and there are Fraggles in the video. It's Ben Folds and Fraggles. If that is not enough of a reason for you to watch that video, then I submit for your approval Miss Anna Kendrick, who is the guest on today's podcast. She was nominated for an Oscar. I think maybe our first Oscar nominee? Is that right? That is a serious distinction. Look at us classing it way up on the Nerdist podcast. So we met on when she was on the video, and she was awesome and super cool. And so I said, hey, well, you should be on the podcast. And then it happened. And guess what? Spoiler alert. She was delightful. So she's in a new movie called The End of Watch, which was written by the guy who wrote Training Day, which you liked. So I'm guessing this is probably a pretty good movie, especially if it has her in it. So go check it out. It opens Friday, September 21st. And right now, the Nerdist Podcast, as proof of the delightfulness, with Anna Kendrick.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
That is not true.
It just makes everything look bad. Yeah. It makes all the wrong stuff look big and vice versa.
I kind of weirdly want to just like be in my underwear in front of wood paneling and be in an American Apparel ad. Is that weird? Just like a greasy, creepy picture.
And I want the picture to really feel like a Polaroid that was taken in someone's basement kind of against my will. I was really reluctant to take the photo.
Yeah, instead of cheese, everyone says, what are you doing? And then this is a... I gotta put these headphones on. So the microphones, you kind of have to get right on them because they're radio mics. Anna Kendrick, you are delightful. I love that you're here on the show.
Hey, dude.
It's already started.
What's going on?
Nothing. We just recently met.
That's true.
You know this. I'm saying this for the benefit of people listening. And I guess by the time, this will go up next week, so that the video will be out by then.
Okay, good. Okay. I was hoping you would have planned it that way. Otherwise, it'd be weird to be like, we met doing this thing that we can't talk about.
Anyway, thanks for being here. Like, that's the whole show. Yeah, we did the... Kyle, hop on the mic for a sec. Did we tell you about this? Did we tell you about the Ben Folds video?
I heard about it on the Liam Lynch interview.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. So we made this... We made a Ben Folds video for the new Ben Folds 5 album with Fraggles and Anna Kendrick.
It has two of the best things in the world, then.
And also Rob Corddry.
Oh, okay.
Is also
just
in
keeps
it too.
Getting better.
but I think I have the latest cut of it. If you want to see before you leave,
yeah, I absolutely do.
It's really fun. Were you a Fraggle fan growing up?
I was a Fraggle fan. I grew up watching Muppet Family Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with Muppet Christmas Carol.
Different.
It's one of those things where there's like a whole underground community of people who like swap VHS tapes because the only version that they ever officially released doesn't have some of the songs in it.
Really?
So, you know, there are just tons of people who, you know, like I did, grew up watching a version that their parents taped off of TV, and that has everything in it. So,
and probably some sweet local commercials.
Yeah, exactly. The one about milk helping you to grow up strong, and
yep.
It's really like an anti-bullying message in that milk commercial.
Milk does body good.
It was a big staple on like early '90s Nickelodeon.
Is that right?
Yeah, because I remember Jim Henson. Just for whatever reason, early Nickelodeon had tons and tons of stuff through there, and that Christmas special, it would air in the summer, like, and I just remember loving it because it had the Fraggles in it in that portion.
Yeah.
And so
it's the Muppets, the Fraggles, and the Sesame Street gang all gathered for Christmas.
My God,
it's real good,
an amazing mashup.
Yeah,
because when you're a kid, you're like, they're all friends. Like,
yeah.
You love the idea.
And, like, when they first meet, they're sort of bewildered by each other, but, you know, they overcome their differences.
There are other fell people in the world. We're not the only ones.
They cut the scene where they're all just hugging and crying.
Oh, man. It's just like when two real world casts meet. Like, I totally get what you went through. But the video turned out great. The song was so much fun, and you were great in the video. So thank you for doing it.
No, that was a dream. I was so excited. I got halfway through that email, and I was just like, yes, please, yes, thank you.
Did you get to walk around the Henson lot at all? It's pretty cool.
I didn't really that day. I've done like some random ADR around there.
Gotcha.
I mean, it is the strangest little secret corner. It's like Diagon Alley or something.
It really is.
It's like across from a really seedy strip joint. It's on.
And not only is it across from a seedy strip joint, but the seedy strip joint just looks disgusting. And then right at the top is Kermit in a top hat, just like saying, top of the morning to you,
yeah.
to the strippers as they crawl out at, you know, whatever hour.
And it's on like, it's La Brea, right?
It's La Brea, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, so it's like surrounded by fast food chains and
it's so weird. Well, that's the old, Chaplin built that. That's the old Chaplin Studios from the, you know, the early 1900s, the 20s.
Okay, I'm getting a history lesson.
And then it became A&M Records for a long time. So the recording studios we were in, like, Carole King and like all the David Lee Roth, like all these people recorded in those studios. So it's just the place has a ridiculous amount of history to it. And now
it was a treat.
Anna Kendrick.
Did you get the directions? When the first time I went there for a Nerdist thing, the guy in front of me who was getting directions was like, all right, so you're going to walk down the hallway, and when you get to Snuffleupagus, go left.
Oh, my God. You're kidding.
And I just went,
No, I didn't get that.
See, they have dark crypt. There's like Skeksis around the lot and like dinosaurs from the show Dinosaurs.
Oh, my God. Amazing.
That's pretty amazing. You, if I am psychic or have the internet, you grew up in Portland, Maine.
That's amazing.
Right?
That's exactly right.
It's the internet makes everyone a wizard. Like, I could learn anything in a moment's notice. Have you tried the internet? It's pretty cool.
I'm looking into it.
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah.
I think it's cool, whatever. I don't care. Oh, whatever.
Whatever.
So
that's true. Those are facts.
What is in Portland, Maine? I've never been to Portland, Maine.
I think people are disappointed by what I have to say about Portland. You know, it was just kind of neither here nor there in terms of a great story. Obviously, I thought it was lovely, and I'm really glad that I got to grow up there, but I wasn't, like, living in a log cabin.
Okay.
But it was, you know, I grew up in the largest city in Maine, which is only 65,000 people.
Oh, but so you lived in a log high-rise.
Hell yeah. No, I mean, you know, it just felt really kind of suburban, you know, kind of traditional, I guess. And, you know, in the most cliche way, everybody there just can't wait to leave. And it's not until you leave that, you know, kind of being from Maine becomes part of my identity. And,
sure,
you know, I'm really like a proud Mainer.
Do you think you'll ever, could you ever live there again? Maybe some point?
Well, weirdly, when I was growing up there, there were still two, like, art house cinemas. And there was a video store there. Like, I remember, you know, going into a video store and just, like, picking up Mouchette.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like watching films like that by accident, which was great. And I think that video store still stands, but the two art house cinemas are gone.
Aww.
So I don't know that I could hack it at this point.
And now in Portland, Maine.
You know, because a lot of movies just never make it out there.
Oh, that's so crazy.
Yeah, it's not like they just get them a little later. Like, they just never get there.
See, and that's when I think you went, and as of course I'm making a ton of dumb jokes about the internet, but that's when you really have to appreciate the power of being in a kind of a rural area, but then still weirdly having access in front of your couch to at all of everything.
Completely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the frustrating thing about the internet right now, I feel like, you know, we're in that point where, like, when all the record stores were closing, but iTunes hadn't really expanded its library enough. And I feel like we're at that point with movies where there's nowhere to rent a DVD, there's nowhere to buy a DVD.
Right.
But Netflix does not have everything, you know? Yeah. I mean, particularly things like Netflix Instant, which I think most people would like to have that service exclusively.
Those licensing deals are a pain in the balls to make, and so that's why they have a bunch of old TV shows, because they're very easy licensing deals to make.
And I even tried to rent, like, Rome Open City on iTunes, and, you know, they don't have it. Like, so I'm surprised by the amount of stuff that iTunes does have sometimes, but, you know,
there's
their movie selection is really
holes.
Not.
Well, I have to make the rounds, so, like, my digital mall is, like, you know, you go Netflix, iTunes, Zune, Amazon. Like, you hit all of them.
Zune.
Huh?
You're going Zune.
Well, if you have Xbox, like, you have the Zune Marketplace, so you can just stream, you know, you can get movies. And they actually do have some stuff that the other ones don't have. So I don't have a Zune player or anything. I just mean, like, my Zune Marketplace on the Xbox.
Do you guys ever have that insane moment where you find out that there's, like, a music or a movie that's not made it to digital at all?
Yeah.
Like, and you're just like, how did this happen? How did, in this world of reissues and everything going, and there's just something.
I get really disappointed in the internet when that happens. I blame the amorphous, faceless internet. Like, how could you let me down like this? Look, how many videos of capuchin monkeys riding cats do you have?
But you can't get most of Cameron Crowe's early movies on DVD.
I mean,
no,
come on.
You know, like, Rocket Video going out of business was...
Oh, it did?
Man. My ass, because I remember there was tons of stuff. There was a lot of early Bergman stuff that you could only get on VHS.
Yeah.
You know, so I...
You should try my library.
I still have a VHS player.
What about Cinephile?
Just in case.
Oh, you do?
In case I run into things like that. I mean, I find I use it less and less, but it's the only way I could find Through a Glass Darkly, so there you go.
Damn it!
Really?
Yeah.
I think it is
on Criterion now, but
I know
that at the time when
I tried
to rent it at Rocket Video, they directed me to the VHS section.
By the way, did I introduce you? Kyle Clark is our intern, and Matt and Jonah are both working on, and so I pulled you on because I just felt bad. You're just sitting in the corner over there.
I like hanging out. I got nowhere to be. I've got a place to go now. Because I work at night, either with the theater or doing comedy, but during the day, I literally watch Netflix. Like,
so you know the landscape of Netflix. You've combed all of it.
Those failings are quite apparent sometimes.
Anna, here's why I'm a big piece of shit. I did not know that you were in the Twilight. I've never seen a Twilight movie.
That's okay, honey.
And that makes me feel, I really feel like I should, because it is such a part of the fabric of our cultural landscape now.
Not at
and
all.
I just haven't seen a Twilight movie yet.
That's okay, man. It's, you know, I appreciate when somebody like you, particularly when, you know, you seem to have a strong commitment to all things, film related. I think, because something that I tend to say is there are plenty of people in the world who only know me from Twilight, but there are still people in the world who literally don't know that I'm in it. And I think that people don't believe me when I say that, because generally, like, when I'm talking to journalists, they are just, like, waiting to get their Twilight question in.
Oh, wow.
And they don't really want to talk about whatever project I'm working on.
You have this vast knowledge of cinema.
I think they don't believe me. You know, I think they think that that's just something I say to kind of make myself, like, as though I would need to distance myself from it, which I don't feel
right.
I need to do. So, somebody at the Huffington Post said that to me, and now you, so that's on the record.
I'd be in a fucking Twilight movie. I've been in a heartbeat. Absolutely. I don't know why I haven't seen the Twilight movies yet. It's like, I always kind of get to that point where I'm like, you know, I'm just going to watch Twilight tonight because I haven't seen it. And I just kind of want to know what all the fuss is about.
I think it's because you know that if you watch that one as a completist, you're going to have to go through the other four.
That's true.
What if I love them so much?
You're comfortable enough with who you are, though. You could do that.
I am. I don't give a shit what I like. I like what I like, and I'm not ashamed of anything that I like. I don't fucking care. I like a lot of yacht rock unironically. Like, I'll just listen to fucking Michael McDonald, and I love it. I don't care. I'll listen to Poco, just break out some yacht rock.
I worked with middle school girls, like, at a private school for 3 or 4 years. So by the end of it, I had a scary working knowledge of Twilight.
Yeah.
I sure hope you didn't have that beard when you did it, because that's a big red flag.
I think I looked worse for large portions of it, which I suppose is not a good testament to the school itself.
But is that just through their chatter? Or were you forced to? I taught
drama there, but I also worked the lunchtime thing. Okay. And they'd just be reading and occasionally it's like, okay, explain to me why this is good.
So you were like the Jane Goodall of elementary school girls.
Yeah, like
you
six,
lived
seventh,
among
eighth
them
grade.
For a while. And learned their tools.
So I know a lot about the band Fun and Twilight.
All right. Jonah just had an aneurysm about that band yesterday. But I asked you before, is Cinephile, do you know if Cinephile's still open?
I don't know, actually. And I was just at the New Art to see Sleepwalk With Me, and but I was late, so I literally sprinted past it. So
how great was Sleepwalk? Did you enjoy Sleepwalk With Me? Verbiglia is great.
I really, really loved it, and I've been a fan of his for a long time, and I'm really happy that people are liking the movie.
Do you know Mike?
I don't know. I just tweeted about the film, so he, you know, said thank you. But so he's like a Twitter friend, which isn't a real friend, but it feels like one.
It's sort of, listen, it's one step of a connection above. We have nothing.
And the thing is, I've witnessed this thing happen where people who know each other through Twitter meet for the first time. And so it'll be interesting if I ever do meet Mike Birbiglia. Like, that'll be my first Twitter friend to real life friend interaction. And I don't know if that's weird.
CelebrityMatch.com in a way. It's almost weird. He's like, I've had that too. And then I've had to remind some people. Actually, when I met Edgar for the first time, we had been Twitter pals, but he had no sense of me in person. And I was like, hey, we've communicated on Twitter. He was like, oh, yo, Nerdist. And I'm like, yes. And we only had...
But he only sees you as Nerdist.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, well, do you... Because it's not your picture on Twitter either.
It is. It's my sixth or seventh grade class picture. Yeah. So I don't still look the same?
It's hard to tell without the 5 o'clock shadow. It's kind of your thing.
I had the bowl cut and the glasses and this and the sensible tie.
You still have
you
that
know,
part.
Yeah. Oh,
still
boy.
With a sensible tie.
That look was the antidote to female interaction. There was none of it. I know.
Sweet 80s Gina.
Oh, my God. There was none. None of that. 80s Gina. Kyle, please. Now I know why you don't work with kids
keep
anymore.
Classy.
I mean, seriously, this is the Nerdist podcast, Kyle.
Guys,
come on. 80s Gina.
You guys are gross.
I mean, come on. What the hell? But you started when you were really young, though. Like, this is...
Yeah, it's funny. I always feel like people make... people's opinion of me changes when they find out I was, like, a child actor.
Why?
Because I started when I was 12. I did a Broadway show when I was 12. And, you know, that's understandable to me because I remember being 12 and meeting all the other kids who were doing shows at the time and being like, this is weird. You guys are fucking weird.
Actor kids and stage moms.
You guys smile all the time.
What are you suppressing?
I think I worry that people assume that means that I'm a crazy one. I might be, but not in a normal child actor way.
Well, you do. If you are, you hide it well, because I haven't sensed any craziness. I don't see the crazy eyes.
I'm pretty good at hiding it.
So. You are an Academy Award-nominated actress. You push it down. I don't know how else to ask this question. What the fuck does that feel like, where all of a sudden they're like, oh, yeah, Anna, you're nominated for a thing. Was there talk before, like, this might happen, or was it just way out of, like, what the shit?
It was talked about, arguably ad nauseum, which was confusing. And I remember, journalists ask you about it a lot. People are saying you're going to get nominated, and how does that make you feel?
Stop saying that.
Like, yeah, it felt like inappropriate. It felt like I was surprised that so many people would say something so inappropriate. I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm not explaining that well. Like,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it just felt like, why would you say that? Because what if I don't? Or, you know, or what if I do? Am I just supposed to be like, well, you know, I did figure.
Exactly. they just want to hear the humility and go, I can't imagine.
And one of the smartest things that anybody ever said to me I did this interview with this musician called Sad Brad, and I was talking to him about how I was finding it weird, you know, the interview thing very weird. And he kind of said, well, don't they just need footage of you talking? And I was like, you know what? Yeah. Like, do they expect me to say anything other than, oh, that's very kind, you know, that's very sweet that anybody would say that. I just hope people see the film. I was just proud to be a part of it. No, that's exactly what they expect me to say, and that's exactly what they expect everybody to say every year when people start making their predictions and they ask that person. But they just need footage of them saying it so that
right.
they can say, later, we talked to so-and-so about
right.
da-da-da.
So you really could, you know, maybe just for fun next time it happens, because it'll probably happen again, you could just, when they ask you that question, just rattle off a grocery list and just like and go, yeah, what's it like to be nominated? Loaf of bread, a quart of milk, and a stick of butter.
I could try that. Sometimes I try to deflect questions like that, and they don't like it. They get mad. Yeah, but it was definitely a weird period of time. Because I just kept thinking, like, why would you say that to, like, a 23-year-old girl? Like, this is probably going to happen. Because what if it didn't? Like, all of a sudden I wake up and I'm disappointed that I'm not an Oscar nominee?
No, then they can be like, are you disappointed that you didn't get nominated?
I've been totally fine with not being an Oscar nominee for 23 years. So it was weird. It was really weird.
No, like I said, it's so they could turn around and go, you didn't get nominated. What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
I didn't. You're the one that said this. You did this. And then you become Firestarter, and you just fucking light Hollywood on fire.
Then now I wish that had happened, if I could become Firestarter.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be a great trade-off.
You just need a couple parents who were in part of an experimental government drug program, and then a George C. Scott to creepily want you to stare in his eyes as he murders you. If as long as you could get past that, you'd be fine.
I could easily get past that.
See, Drew Barrymore was a child actor. She turned out fine.
True.
I mean, not for a while, but it all worked out.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some potholes. But everything worked out okay. Was it, did you instantly feel, I mean, I always wonder, do you get superstitious or do you feel like more pressure because there's a lot of eyes on you? Or do you feel like, well, I'll just keep doing what I was doing before. Like, I don't.
Well, one thing that was interesting is when I found out that I was nominated for Golden Globe, I was in a green room waiting to go on a morning show in New York. And I was surrounded by people I didn't know. And, you know, was sort of standing in front of a monitor where they were reading off names and, like, heard my name. And, I mean, a bunch of the other guests that were going to be on the show that day and, like, a band were in this green room. And so I felt like simultaneously I had to react.
Oh, wait, hang on one sec. Sorry. Go ahead.
I felt like I had to react in this really positive and extroverted way, like, you know, like I was performing to be really excited to show everybody that I was really excited, but also kind of keep it a little bit contained because it was a room full of people I didn't know. And that was just a really confusing thing because then I actually had no idea how I felt. I was just focusing on like performing for the other people in the room. So then the morning of the Oscar nominations, I wanted to make sure that like whatever had happened, if I had or I had, you know, I wanted to be completely by myself. So I woke up early and went for a run and told my roommate to just text me whatever happened. And and that was actually really great because I got to just experience that moment getting that text by myself in the middle of this like quiet neighborhood. The sun hadn't even come up yet. And then I like ran all the way home. And, you know, I remember like the song I was listening to and the feel like it was amazing. And I got to like actually find out how that felt by myself and not be just, you know, even if it was with loved ones, I would still feel like I had to scream or jump or do whatever they expected me to do.
Sure.
So that was actually really great. I'm glad I did that.
Is the Academy Awards, is it fun when that's kind of looming or do
you? No, mostly you just want to shit ice all the time. Like I was just like sweating, like, oh, it was so like it. And I realized, you know, the fun thing about that entire experience was the being asked to go and being nominated and, you know, it's the getting invited to the party that's the fun part.
Yeah.
And going to the party is mostly just terrifying.
Oh, man, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh, there's that top 10 most famous person in the world that I've been watching my whole life. Oh, there's that person. oh, they just said my name. This is weird.
Yeah. And by the way, you're wearing a corset that's so tight you can't breathe. And, you know, so it definitely all feels a little surreal, like a strange kind of hellscape. But
I don't. Oh, hellscape. What a great name for a movie. Let's make Hellscape. I don't even know what it is. Let's make Hellscape.
No. And like, obviously, I feel like a dick for being like, it was hard, guys.
No. But I think,
every now and then I do attempt to be honest. Mostly I just say it was great, but.
No, but you're a human being. And anyone in that situation, like, it's not a supernatural experience. It's a real, odd human experience that most people will never have. Like, almost everyone will never have.
Your brain is not prepared to deal with that kind of information.
No, and also just, you know, it's just the way that it's, you know, your whole life is just sort of built up as this thing, and all of a sudden you're just there. I mean, of course it's going to be off-putting. I personally just went to the Emmys one year. I had nothing to do with it. It's just my friend of mine was working on the Emmys, and so I went. And I was terrified I was going to throw up in the audience just being there. Like, what if I just throw up?
You totally should have.
Right?
That would have been awesome.
Sometimes I get weird vomit anxiety where I'm like, I don't feel sick at all. But I'm like,
if I
threw up right now, God, that would be so. I mean, what if I just threw up on Betty White? Like, that'd be so weird.
Please do that.
She'd probably be cool with it.
Let's film it. We put it on the channel.
Oh, I know. Throwing up on Betty most White, viewed video ever. Yeah, I mean that whole experience is so surreal, and it's so artificial and bizarre. Yeah.
Well, and the weird thing about it was, again, like as I said, it's the proverbial being invited to the party that's the amazing part, and then when you're there, there's this additional element of everybody kind of being in your face, being like, aren't you having the best time? Aren't you having the best time you've ever had in your life? And you're secretly thinking, no, this is really strange. And I'm not having fun. And does that make me an asshole that, you know, that I'm not enjoying this as much as I'm supposed to? So it's this weird mental game you start playing with yourself where you like dig yourself into a hole over the fact that you're basically being told that this is the best that it gets. And you're like, but this is bad. This is awkward. Like, this is the best because this is not fun. And then immediately after the Oscars, I went and started filming 50-50. And I was like, oh, no, this is the best that it ever gets. Like, doing rehearsals with Joe and Seth and Jonathan Levine, our director, like, that's what it's all for. And I know, like, if I were listening to this interview, I'd be like, fuck you. Like, that's the truth. Is like, all the stuff that's supposed to be the fun stuff isn't.
Yeah.
And, like, it's, you know, getting to actually do it. That's
but I think that
amazing.
Makes sense, because you don't get into it to win awards. You get into doing stuff because you like doing
the
thing.
That's what I mean. It makes me sound like a jerk.
No.
I'm here for awards, guys. But
and the Oscar for biggest complainer goes to... Thanks, everyone. Yeah, it was a real pain in the ass to come. No, but honestly, I mean, I so understand what you mean, because in the last couple of years, I've gotten to do some things that were, you know, would have been on a bucket list, just like lifelong dream, or even like, you know, so I guess when you're having the experience, it really is that moment of like, is this it? Am I having it now? Am I having it? I really want to appreciate this. I have to appreciate this. And a lot of times I find that it's not until afterwards and kind of in retrospect where you kind of go, you sort of have to sift through and sort out the feelings like, you know, like a piggy bank and just make sure and then go, okay, yeah, that actually was a really interesting, fun experience. But
or even our little video.
Yeah.
Like, that was amazing.
Working with Fraggles.
And frankly, like, I mean, singing that song with the Fraggles was incredible. But even, like, running in the hall and, like, slamming into you. And, no, I know this sounds so stupid, but, like, the feeling, that feeling of, like, no, let's do it again. Like, watching playback and being like, no, we can do it better than that.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great feeling.
That's fun.
And absolutely. Feeling like, we don't have enough time. No, come on, please, let us do it just one more time. We can do it better. Like, that's a feeling, like, that's when your endorphins are really, like...
It was really... For me, the moment was we were shooting... we were shooting stuff with the Fraggles, like, promotional stuff. And then I was like, well, we should get one where... This one thing happens with all the Fraggles and, you know, Uncle Traveling Matt and everything. And then the AD was like, you know, or we know what, we really don't have time. And so I was like, oh, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm making this. Make the time. Like, I got super like, I'm like, all we right. are doing this. And like that feeling to me was really kind of fun on the video. Like, I have Fraggles here and I am going to put them in as many photographs as I feel until I feel satisfied. And everyone had to do it. Oh, it was so awesome. Oh my God, it made me so happy.
That's awesome.
I might be an evil wizard without the wizard part. Maybe I'm evil. But it was so much fun. I mean, I wasn't a dick to everyone, but it was just like, no, let's do it. And they were like, all right.
I think sometimes you need that reality check. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Fraggles. This is as good as this is going.
When is this
going to
happen again?
When is this going to happen? Your Fraggleless existence.
I pity you. I pity you.
I think one of the only times I can remember being like, no, please give me another take was this movie, Get a Job, that hasn't come out yet, where I was not satisfied with the bong rip that I was doing. I was like, no, this is like, you know, because she kind of sucks through a lot of the movie, and then she gets awesome for a little while. And I was like, I felt like, you know, I was doing it within a pretty long scene, and I just wanted to make sure that there was at least one take where I actually, because it was a huge bong, so yeah. You know, I'm a little person, it was kind of not working. I was like,
so it's funny, you have to drain the whole thing, because that's funny.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my diva moment. I was like, I am clearing this. It's happening.
Don't they have like a stunt bong or something?
Well,
that they can
it
help
was
you with?
It was fake. I mean, well, obviously, but it was some kind of, I don't know, some herb that's supposed to be good for your lungs. I'm sure it is good for your lungs, but that didn't automatically mean, as it turns out, that it was good for your throat.
Oh, yeah.
So I spent like the next 3 days with this super sexy gravelly voice, and I was like singing along to like all the like Laura Marling songs that I can't sing to. So that was exciting.
Oh, yeah. It's Kim Carnes, like all those old gravelly. She's got Betty Davis
eyes. Really not a great lower register, so I like took extra car trips that week just to sing in my car.
Yeah, so I know some people that like to record stuff when they get a cold.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh my God, I'm not going to get this again, and then they record.
Well, and I think when you have a cold, you sound the way that you sound in your head to yourself, just a little bit lower.
I think that's true. Do you guys want to get colds and then come back and finish the podcast? Eddie Kendrick is here.
Oh. Hey, guys.
What's happening?
Just in a walk-in fridge pouring water on ourselves until we're sick.
There's no reason we were going to do
really
that.
That's a good plan.
So my next question is, did you bring me the Ant-Man footage that I asked you for? Or is that not going to happen?
Yeah,
or what the fuck?
This is an airing.
I mean, seriously. I mean,
God,
come on. I mean, it's so easy. It'd be so easy for you. He'd give it to you. I mean, seriously.
I don't know what you're talking about.
WTF, Anna Kendrick.
I'm really sorry.
I harassed her about that on the Fraggle video. Hey, it's really nice to meet you, Fanny Burke. What about the Ant-Man footage? Like, hey, take it easy. Come on, I'm making a video here. I apologize for harassing you.
Okay.
But you're a huge movie. You quoted. I mean, you've cited Rocket Video and Cinephile and all of the movies you used to watch. Is film kind of your passion?
Yeah. I mean, when I was like 12, my dad insisted that I get like a basic education of the classics.
Yep.
So when I would want to rent like, you know, Spice World or something, he'd be like, okay, but if we get Spice World, we're also getting Casablanca or
that
African
rules.
Queen or His Girl Friday. And so, you know, I got like a little bit of the basics when I was a kid. And then it wasn't until I made my second film, really, that I kind of fell in love with filmmaking. Because the first one, I just had no idea what was going
on. Sure.
That I really started to fall in love with filmmaking and started to try and educate myself more. And there was definitely a period where I was watching, like, 3 and 4 films a day. I had signed up for Blockbuster's version of Netflix when that was still a thing. So I had, like, 6 movies in my house at a time. And 3 to 4 movies a day is not a good way to watch movies, actually. Particularly because I thought the best thing to do would be to watch, like, all my Truffauts in one sitting. And it's just, that, you know, I think you should do the opposite of that.
Well, some of those you have to process.
Kind of
you really have to process.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I find it easier to watch, you know, like, I watched I Spit on Your Grave and The Triplets of Belleville back to back. And that's actually great because you're never going to confuse those elements.
Nope.
Whereas, like, masculine and feminine and femme, like, those bleed into one movie for me. Because I, you know, I watched them too close together, and yeah, I didn't give myself time. I just thought, like, I'm just going to consume as much as I can. So now I try not to do that, and I try to see stuff in theaters as much as I can. And I like seeing movies by myself, which helps.
Oh, I don't mind seeing movies by myself either, although I feel like I just don't spend enough time going to see movies. I've kind of gotten to this place where I'm like, well, I got to park, and then I got to go in and yeah. sit down, and people are loud, and the cell phones and the theaters. Like,
well, and truly, like, I'm becoming a real curmudgeon about the, like, half-hour previews and commercials before.
Right.
It's just becoming unmanageable. So that's a big deterrent for me. I try not to let that be a problem, but...
I would pay, like, a couple of dollars more for no ads, no anything.
That's a good idea, actually.
I think, well...
Because I don't want to pay more for 3D, but I'd pay more for a movie to just start on time.
Isn't that so fucked up? You don't get a choice with the commercials, and then they just wear you down to the point where you're like, I will pay you if you please stop airing commercials.
Yeah.
But they should just air the commercials in the pre-preview when they're doing all the trivia games and
shit.
That
was fair enough. When commercials started before the actual start time of the film, fine. And when the start time of the film actually just means that the film previews have started, again, fine. But when it's commercials after the start time, absolutely not. Come on now.
I know. At the next hot meeting, I'll bring it up.
I'm looking at you, Universal City Walk.
What did we do wrong, Anna Kendrick? That's how Universal City Walk talks. We got that really cool King Kong hanging off the building. City Walk's one of those places where every once in a while you're like, you know, there's a lot of activity. It's probably fun. And then you go there, and then 5 minutes later, you're like, I have to get the fuck out of here. I'm going to murder myself. It's all these crazy teens.
Yeah.
I don't really.
I think there's a limit where at a certain age, it's really awesome. And then the drop off is pretty intense.
Steep. It's really steep.
Although they still have that comic book store there that's probably in my top 5 comic book stores in LA.
Oh,
like,
that's
it's
cool.
Weirdly consistent.
But not better than Meltdown, right?
No, nothing okay, good. On the planet is better than Meltdown.
Better than the store you work at. Are you able to watch films as a regular person, or are you so much? Have you seen so many films? And just with the craft of acting, do you have to analyze everything?
I think it's a little bit of both. The thing that takes me out of movies that started the soonest for me, and you know, has been consistently difficult, is when you can tell that a line's been looped or punched in or something, because not only is it just like a little bit of a jarring, but then I start thinking, okay, what plot point was unclear that they had to add that, or what scene got cut where they just decided to reduce that piece to like one line on somebody's back, or especially when it's like there's a bunch of dialogue in a car where you're just looking at like an overhead shot of the car. You're just like, oh my God, this, because to me, then I'm just thinking, oh, how many holes were in this screenplay that they had to add
exposition.
Just to make it clear what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
But then, you know, at the same time, sometimes I wish I were more cognizant of, you know, the way that the camera's being used, or, you know, just aware of performance, or I don't know. It's sort of a weird combination of both. And certainly it's not as though movies have been diminished for me at all. You know, quite the opposite.
Oh, that's good.
What's like your perfect movie? Like, do you have one or two that you just go back to and they just fill you with happiness?
There are a couple movies, like recent movies, that I remember thinking that was so satisfying to me in every level. You know, when you're hungry and you eat something and you're just like, that was perfect. That was exactly what I wanted.
I call them chai lattes.
but it just like hits the spot. There were three films in like the recent years where I just felt like, and I love that feeling of please be the end, please be the end. And then it is.
Mm-hmm.
Was JCVD, This Is England, and In Bruges.
Oh, In Bruges.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Just like, those are perfect movies to me. Like,
absolutely.
They the best films I've ever seen? No, but
they're just
satisfying. So satisfying. Like, I just,
In Bruges in particular,
I just saw Seven Psychopaths.
Oh my God, is it good?
It is so good. Oh. If you don't like Martin McDonagh, and I know that there are some weirdos out there that don't.
We call them wrong.
It won't change your mind, but you know, if you don't like Martin McDonagh, you're dead inside. So whatever. Yeah.
So you're a fan of the plays too?
Yeah.
Lieutenant Van Inchmore.
Yeah.
That made me like plays.
I saw Beauty Queen of Lenin when I was 12 with my family, and my mom was just horrified by it. So it was this interesting moment where my brother and I realized, like, oh, our sense of humor comes from our freaky Irish dad. Got it. Okay. Like, into that dark stuff. So, yeah, I've got a real affection for...
Have you heard that he and Tom Waits are on again, off again, working on a musical?
No.
That's... I keep hearing pieces of it that they sort of send back and forth about it.
Speaking of voice gravel.
I want to exist more than the two of them working on everything they can do. Like,
that's amazing. And Tom Waits is amazing in it, in Seven Psychopaths.
He's great in most movies he's in. Like, I think it's because he only works with really good people.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's amazing.
Well, he's not a guy. I mean, it's obviously directors go, I just want to put Tom Waits in something. It's not like, I can't picture Tom Waits in an audition waiting room being like, okay, how am I going to, all right, I'm going to go in. Okay, all right.
But he has enough range. You look at Dracula versus, like, his stuff with Jim Jarmusch. He has a little bit of range. It's all gravelly guy, but variations on gravelly guy.
Sure. Which I think is fine. I mean, I don't think, I mean... You know, there are some people who are just really good at,
yeah.
I mean, you know, they're definitely the actors who, like, some people get so much credit for playing these crazy characters and transforming. Yeah. And then I always go,
I think
it's harder to play a regular guy because what do you hook into with that?
And I think there's absolutely value to people being really great at a certain kind of thing. And, you know, I feel like more and more people don't like that, or they know they're not supposed to like it. You know, nobody's got a problem with Woody Allen being Woody Allen.
Sure.
And you know, a lot of people have a problem with, like, Michael Cera, and I just don't understand that, because he's so good, and it's so fun to watch him. I just don't understand this kind of
hatred. It's the same kind of thing like Peter Lorre.
Yeah.
You know, who's the guy who played such a specific character and everything, but he's great in that role.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, you know, I've been guilty of some of the Michael Cera thing.
Fair enough.
A little bit.
You did get quiet all of a sudden. I noticed neither of you went, yeah, what's the problem?
God damn it. You know why? Because I'm such a positive, upbeat, supportive guy, and I just didn't want... It's like, I don't... You know what? I'll tell you what it was. I'll tell you what it was for me. I met him once because he was dating a girl I knew, and it wasn't that he was rude. It just was he couldn't be bothered. And then he was supposed to perform at a... I don't judge people by their performances. I judge, like, interactions. He was supposed to perform at a festival that my ex-girlfriend was producing. And a week before the festival, his agent called her and canceled, even though they had sold tickets based on his name to the thing. And she's very non-confrontational, but she was like... I mean, I don't know what to say. We can't cancel the show at this point. And he just kind of just didn't feel like doing it. He was tired or something because he had come back from a press junket. And his agent went fucking ballistic and had other clients in the festival and threatened to pull him out. Oh. And like went so... She was such a piece of shit. Like, she made my ex-girlfriend cry.
Whoa.
Like, she was so fucking mean. Like, you better, like one of those. And well, it wasn't even.
No, and listen, like, you know, just because Michael's a friend, I feel like I can't just sit here and listen.
Please, of course.
No.
Yeah.
And I would say that obviously is not great. And that was a weird thing that happened to you, clearly.
He should know that his agent's an asshole.
But hearing that is such a surprise to me, because to me, he's the guy who literally, he just wants to, like, ask you questions. Like, he's one of those guys who makes you feel really interesting.
Really?
Because he just wants to know about you. Like, honestly, I'm sure you guys would get along so well.
Well, I do like to talk about myself.
So, you know, obviously you had, like, a weird interaction with him.
Sure.
But, I think that kind of thing makes me really nervous, because, like, I'm sure that there have been days where I've just been, like, dealing with some craziness.
I know.
I'm sure I've been like, cold to people and not even realize.
Me too.
And, you know, I would hate to think that they would hold that against me.
I just got
anybody against one time too, just because I know everybody's got that thing. And then like you look at lots of people that you meet, you're like, oh, that guy's a dick. And then years later, you're, oh, we're friends now. But remember, I hated you the first time we met. Like,
I think now that I'm thinking
like
about analyzing, I think it was more. It was either his agent or his manager, but she was really like, and just sort of. I had met her once before, and she was a genuinely awful person. I don't say that about a lot of people, but there are some people in this business that it's like that behavior is weirdly like no one ever calls them on it. They're like, "How are you? How can you be so mean to other human beings?" You know, like there's it's like swimming with sharks, like that kind of agent type. And it's like you don't have to fucking rip people's throats out every time to get something done, but some people are just in that mode.
Yeah.
So I, you know, maybe I wasn't. I'm glad we really worked this out.
No,
I'm sure Michael will feel a lot better. I'm sure Michael will feel a lot better in this fake feud that he's not aware of. I would have him on, and I'll tell him the story, and we'll talk, and hopefully we'll laugh about it. But anyway, I was a big sidetrack.
No, not at all. I think it's one of those things that drives me doubly crazy because there are so many people that, you know, the kind of people that hate Michael Cera, there are people who they love who I want to be like, I could tell you stories about that person that would make your hair stand on end. You know, like there are so many people that are so beloved and I just want to be like, they're dicks. So it's frustrating when like really great people get the short end of the stick and vice versa.
Well, that makes me very happy. I am such a sucker for like if someone is just a nice, cool person, you know, like I am way on board, way on board. Because I think that's ultimately the most important thing. And I just, you know, sometimes you just see people and maybe they're in restaurants and they're being shitty to the staff or whatever. And you're just like, oh, fucking
I mean, that stuff like. I mean, obviously, I worry about that. I worry about, like, having, like, a weird interaction with somebody and then, like, hating me forever. But the funny thing to me is that the only time I've ever seen anything bad about myself is, like, something that didn't happen. Like, I've actually seen things online where people are like, I saw her at this thing, and she, you know, this little girl came up to her and asked her for an autograph, and she said no, and then she kicked a puppy, and like, stuff
murdered
like, where I'm like, what? Like, who would bother to make that up? Like, why would you do that? Like, I saw something on Reddit about, like, me being, I was just like, that didn't happen, and you can't respond to it, but it's just...
There's really nothing you can say.
It just makes you like, that didn't happen. Like, there was... And, you know, if I was a dick one day, then, like, fair enough. But if you're just making it up, I just don't know what that is.
Well, that puppy got a lot of money to say you kicked it.
It was a... The puppy is extorting money from celebrities.
The puppy's on the cover of OK Magazine.
All right, listen.
Who have kicked me?
This is going to sound weird. I'm a perma puppy. I'm going to extort money from you because I can talk. I should have said that.
Times are tough, even for a talking perma puppy.
Talking perma puppy. If you were a talking perma puppy, you could fuck so many people over so hard because people are always going to side with a puppy. I don't give a shit who you are. You are never going to win against a puppy. It's puppy one, you zero forever, times a million. And the problem with that kind of stuff is that, like you said, if you go on and go, hey, it's me, Anna Kendrick, that didn't really happen. Well, sure, of course you'd say that.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Or like, you know, in theory, you should just be like above it and, you know, you don't even know that stuff exists. And, yeah, but it's tempting. It's definitely like every now and then I'll think about like, you know, something like that. And I'll just be like, I should just fucking... you know, but yeah, I mean, you can't. And then, like, when somebody was like, "Well, there was one time where you were rude, and that actually happened," then I'd be like, "Well, okay, fair enough. Sorry, I'm a bitch sometimes."
Which you're allowed to be because you're a person.
Yeah, I know. There is that sort of like, you're famous. You better be superhuman. Because, you know, if someone does, you know, just like the...
Well, I just assume that for the most part, I genuinely assume nobody knows who I am. And this is the stupidest thought that runs through my head constantly, is when... this is so stupid.
Please.
when somebody recognizes me, the first thing that I think in my head, which is insane, is how did they recognize me? I don't even look like me. Which is
that's such a weird...
It doesn't make any sense. I just think, like, because, you know, you get, like, when you do, like, photo shoots and stuff, you just feel like this weird drag queen version of yourself. And so then I feel like when I'm on the street, I'm tiny. Nobody realizes how tiny I am. And you know, I usually look like a bum. And I just think, well, now no one will recognize me. It's like being in disguise. I just never think, oh, I should just make sure to be really smiley with people, you know, just in case. You know, there
it was strange that you came in with a bindle and a top hat. See, where the top was shooting
off. The joke that I was going to go for is that next time I'll see you, like, in New York, I'll go to give, like, $5 to a homeless person and just see, like, torn clothes and, like, scruff and a hat with a hole in it. Like, oh, hey, Chris, it's me, Anna. Oh, my God, you are literal. I thought you were just speaking figuratively, like, oh, I didn't wear any makeup today. Like, you
really,
like,
like a hobo.
The top of your shoe is missing. I can see your toes, and those aren't sandals. This is so weird.
I've got a kerchief tied to a stick over my shoulder.
They call that a bindle.
Oh, that's a bindle.
I had to find out what it was called and looked it up.
You just used that word and I just...
Your belt is a tie.
You know now.
I do.
And your life just got a little better.
And the stick is a bindle staff. So you have the bindle and the bindle staff.
I see.
Yeah. So the next time you want to go hoboing.
I like that you're so well-versed in homeless vocabulary.
Spend a lot of time pretending to be homeless around here.
The true story is my father's father and my great-grandfather used to hop on trains and go hoboing across my dad's
That's
side of the
awesome.
Family. Are like the reddest of necks. And they use like Alabama, you know, Ozark Mountains.
The only other person I know who has done it, the singer from the band of Veil, does that. And I thought he was an insane person. So you've now validated that that's a thing.
It's an actual thing. I mean, you have to understand this was, you know, my great grandfather, my grandfather. So this was the, you know, the early 20th century when, you know, when there was most of America was not entirely industrialized yet. So it's, kind of makes, I mean, I could picture it. Like, I can sort of see the charm of, like, let's go out on the, I don't know if they talk this way. Let's go out on the open country and see the world. And then that's, you know, how else are you going to see the world in the 20s? You just hop on a fucking train.
Yeah, hoboing.
And sleep in a train car and trade stories.
So tell us about your new film, Hobo on a Train.
Oh, you should tell us about End of Watch.
Okay, what do you want to know?
Well, it comes out the 21st. I know this. And then I don't know anything else.
Okay, that's a good place to start.
Intense trailer.
Yeah. It's Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena are cops. And they've been partners for a long time. It's David Ayer wrote and directed it, who wrote Training Day.
Yep.
I think I'm going to keep using this quote. Somebody called it like the most... real and funny episode of Cops you've ever seen, or something like that. And I thought, that's perfect. Because there is, like, a plot, there is a through line, but it really just feels consistently like a day in the life, like you're just watching kind of footage. Like, David originally wanted the entire thing to be found footage.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that would have been really ambitious and interesting, but he ended up adding some traditional camera elements. But it really blends the two really seamlessly. It feels really intimate, and it's, yeah, just a really intense movie. I play Jake's girlfriend in it, and
all right,
yeah, it's great. And we had the screening at TIFF, and like people were freaking out. It was awesome. I've never been in a movie myself where people like gasp, like the entire audience. That's at like four different points. We're like.
Nice.
I was like, that is awesome.
Well done,
that was
you guys.
So much better than laughter.
What are the odds of a prequel called Start of Watch?
It's funny.
Thank you.
It's
Thank
very
you.
Funny.
See, because it was End. Kyle, you're fired.
I know. It's been a while since you fired me. So
it's
really
a good
has.
Joke.
It really has. But you know what?
How often in the press screenings thus far have you been asked that?
Just you're the, so I you're can, the first.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, you're a pioneer. You're rehired.
Thank you. There we go.
I feel like Jake Gyllenhaal's girlfriend, it might be intimidating to date you. I'd be like, hey, how was it hanging out with Jake all day? I was on Xbox, whatever.
Wait.
You know, I do stuff too. I
watched Donnie Darko.
I know how to play chess. I just need a minute.
It was, you know, and this is something I feel like people say all the time, and it's another thing that I thought, that's bullshit. Like, before I started making movies, I just thought, that's crap. That, like, oh, it, you know, those romantic scenes really aren't that romantic, and there's a bunch of people standing around, and I was like, yeah, but it's still gonna be awesome, right? Like, you're just saying that to make, to like cover your ass.
That's what you say to your significant other. But on set,
but
it is
really
white,
like,
hot.
Like, let's do this.
Yeah, seriously.
Let's,
I mean,
cheat
this
for
is
free.
A this is a free fucking
yeah,
pass.
Like,
this is a paid vacation.
Yeah. And it's just, it is really hard to say just how uncomfortable it is. I would say that this was weirdly the closest it's been to feeling like, kind of like, oh, we're kissing, and I feel nervous about it. It's weird. Because actually, my first day was like the kind of intimate scene.
Sure. Oh, jump right in.
And when we did 50-50, we did some reshoots, and there was a suggestion that we kiss, you know, at the end of the movie, and we didn't end up doing it. But when they were saying that, I was like, oh, God, please don't. It's been, the window's closed now. I'm too, like, I think, you know, he's in, like, the friend, you know, like a brother zone.
Right.
I can't, please don't make me kiss him, please. Even though he's clearly, like, an attractive man. But it was actually better doing it the first day, which most people complain about. I thought it was a lot easier. Just get it out of the way and then be like weird.
I hadn't even considered, I haven't even considered that point, that that you could friends, that someone could be friend zoned, and then it's like, all right, get on top of each other. Like,
make it feel real. And the thing that is amazing, people think like, that the chemistry is just amazing between, and it's like, that's just the editor, guys. Like, it was weird. Mostly it was just like, okay, don't, like, you know, don't squish my nose that way or whatever. You know, that's the
right
kind of thing you're thinking about.
They cut out all the dry heaving and they're like, oh, I'm sorry. It's just
sorry,
weird.
You're just so gross, Jake. You're just so gross.
Well, you're just so much like a brother.
You're repulsive.
Is it, it, do you feel, what is the pressure for actresses to like do sexier scenes? And like, what do you think the line is? I mean, you're obviously a very well-respected actress, and I, but what do you, where do you think, where is that line?
Believe it or not, I haven't. I don't really have that problem. I remember. It's gonna get deep for a second.
Please.
No.
Let's deep dive.
I remember. I was like a late bloomer. I mean, I'm still like tiny, so you can imagine. And I remember my mom saying to me, like, to comfort me, because I was like 15 and still looked like a 9-year-old boy. Being like, you know, I always was jealous of the girls who, like, developed really early. But then I think it was a blessing in disguise, because I never had to wonder if guys were only interested in me because, like, I had big boobs or whatever.
Sure.
And I was like, I would be fine with that. I would be fine if guys were only interested in me for
you
that reason.
You always want the other side.
And I think, you know, even though in the moment maybe I don't feel that way, I feel like I've never had to worry if I've gotten a job just because I'm, like, full-on Jessica Biel style, like, I'm just, like, the only reason I made it is, like, my looks. So, you know, I feel like it's, like, I like that I don't have to worry about that, and I don't get, like, a barrage of offers to do, like, half-naked, like, surfer chick flicks. So
I think, listen, I'm all for late blooming. I was way late bloomer. I was 4'10" until my sophomore year of high school. And I, you know, as I've said before, I had to take PE with the, like, when I was in eighth grade, I had to take PE with fifth and sixth graders.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, when I was, I remember.
But you had to?
Well, I had to take PE, but I was too small for the, everyone else in my class. And so,
but it was like school mandated that you do that, or you just did it?
No, I didn't choose to do that. It was humiliating, but they were like, oh, we'll let you play basketball with the fifth and sixth graders.
Damn.
I know.
You dominate them.
The sad thing is no. I mean, I was fucking,
don't,
like,
worry about it. The only thing I was good at in PE was archery. The one where you get to stand still. I was great at that.
I mean, I was president of the chess club. Like, I mean, come on, you know, what the fuck? So it wasn't really, like, I realized very early on, like, yeah, the sports are not going to be the path. But yeah, I remember being, I don't remember if I've told the story in the podcast before. And when I was 14, I went to I was also president of the Latin Club, and we went to a Latin convention in the mountains of Colorado because I was living in Denver at the time. And we were in it's sort of like Overlook Hotel kind of a feel of this, like, you know, this YMCA in the mountains, this really old facility. And so there were all these high school students like debating in Latin, and it was all these Latin seminars. And I mean, like Latin, the dead language, not Latino. I would have just said Spanish. So and I remember there was this girl, and I thought she was really cute. And I had the courage to ask her out. I don't know where we were going to go
in Latin.
I wish I remember how to say it, but and she just rubbed the side of my face, and she was like, "Oh, buddy, you're not even old enough to shave yet." And I was like, "But we were the same age." But it was just she was already in older guy mode.
Aww.
What's she doing now? Probably doesn't have a podcast.
But you know, that's funny to me, the idea that a lot of people, not like in interviews, I guess, but people ask me, they like want everybody to have some kind of like revenge, like story or some kind of like justice porn about like, you know.
Oh my God, I love, like, that term.
That'll show, that's a subreddit, that's the only reason I know that.
Well, I love, like, that you love Reddit.
That'll show them, you know, like, tell me about a bully you had in high school and like how you're like, well, now I'm an actress, so fuck you. But really, like, all it felt like to me was like, oh, so I got called short in high school, and now, like, I just get called short publicly. Oh, okay, great. That's so much better.
That's great.
Like, everything that you hated about yourself in high school is now just public domain for people.
Are you going to go to your reunion when it happens?
Probably not. I just don't know what I would. I'm just not close to any, you know.
Yeah.
And again, I think a lot of people would want me to go and be like, what's up now?
Yeah.
But like, that wouldn't satisfy me at all, you know?
You should totally show up and just do the cheesiest version of what people would expect you to be like show up at night with sunglasses and a red sequin gown.
Yes.
And have a chauffeur like put a red carpet wherever you want to walk. Mm-hmm. And have a long,
like, don't make eye contact with me, please.
Have a long cigarette with the gloves.
Yeah. And I think you should just awkwardly
try to mix like current trashy hip hop girl with like old school Titanic.
Exactly. That is the classiest ideal I think our culture has now, is trashy hip hop girl and old school Titanic.
Yeah. I think you keep explaining them that it's a different Anna Kendrick. And just keep trying to give the longest,
like,
version of
how
it's not
here,
you.
I'm just with a friend
just,
who went
just
to the
try to play
school.
It off until your long explanation alienates everyone.
Okay.
It's like an acting
plan.
Game.
I've never seen the justice porn subreddit. I just asked Twitter the other day what subreddits, because I'm, you know, like, I've got my stable of subreddits, and but I'm kind of looking for more.
Yeah.
And of course, a bunch of people were like, go to Space Dicks. And I'm like, no, I will not.
No.
Ever. I know what you're trying to do to me, and I do not submit. But
you've
just
looked once, right?
No, and I haven't, because
I'm almost a little disappointed.
No, I'll tell you why. Because my girlfriend has explained, like, she explained one, like, we were on the phone once, and she was like, "Oh God!" And I'm like, "What?" She was like, "Ah, Space Dicks got me again. I didn't see the Space Dicks thing at the end, and I just clicked." And she's like, I don't know why I subscribed to this. And she explained it to me, and I was like, yeah, I don't need to, you know, I it's very hard for me to erase images from my brain. And so I am not someone who's like, oh, I wonder what it looks like when someone gets, you know, gutted by a combine or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to see
any of
that stuff.
No, every now and then I'll click on a WTF link and be like, now, come on.
Yeah,
no,
I don't need to see a fucking toe
and
after
it's
had
a physical reaction, like, deep somewhere inside me. And it just is a day ruiner.
Nope, I don't need it. Yeah. I don't need that.
I've been, after so much kind of talk about it on Reddit, I decided to just kind of click once and look through my fingers, you know? And I'm not exactly sure what I saw, but, you know, it felt like watching Event Horizon through your fingers. So, yeah, I know enough now to know, like, that it's not a fun place, but it's like you have to look.
Have you done an AMA?
No.
Oh, my God, no. You'd be great!
But I feel like it would be the worst, like, it would be like AMAA, like, oh, there's so many things you can ask me about, because, like, you know, I try to be as diplomatic as possible, and
sure,
that can be pretty boring. I was actually nervous to come on the show because people get so honest, and it's such a kind of open conversational feeling. I was like, just be careful, Anna.
We had that Michael Cera meltdown. Do you have any other friends I can shit on? I'm just curious. Would that make it? Now I want to be friends with the guy. Because it's so funny. You know what I find is that and this doesn't apply to the situation with him, but this is I talked about this in my book. This is just self-serving. But anyway, I used to have a fear of like heights and a fear. I was claustrophobic, and then I got over all of it. But right after I kind of started getting over all that dumb shit, I was up like on the 50th floor of a hotel, and I got into my room, and my first reaction was like, oh, I'm supposed to be afraid of this. And I actually had to stop myself and go, oh, wait a minute. Am I still actually afraid of this? Or do I actually not feel this way anymore? And then I realized, oh, I don't feel this way anymore. And then it went away. And I feel like the same thing happens like with the situation with Michael, where when I said it out loud, I was like, I don't think I care. I'm like, I don't really feel that way anymore. But just you get these, you run these emotional scripts in your brain that just kind of like, so you can just like set it and forget it.
Yeah.
And then when you go back and investigate, you're like, oh yeah, that's not really how I feel anymore.
I find more and more I realize how uncomfortable it is when your identity changes, when something about your identity changes. I remember when I grew up, I was raised religious. And then on my own, like, became very religious. I'm not exactly
Irish
sure
Catholic.
Why. No, a Protestant, kind of boring, middle of the road, Christian light.
Sure.
As you will.
Yep.
And then when I was like 14, 15, like starting to question that was a really uncomfortable time, because I was like, but I'm the girl that's into this, and now who will I be?
Sure.
And I think even little things like, you know, like an old feud or just, you know. Some, you know, taste that you have. It's weird when it changes. Like I find when people who don't really drink decide like maybe I'll just drink socially. It's like a weird thing where for a long time they have to kind of make excuses every time.
I know
like,
exactly you know, what you're talking about. Oh, I'm just decided I can just have a glass of wine.
It's because I'm celebrating.
Right.
You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think one thing that is really just as humans, it's important to do is every once in a while, just think about some of the things that you think you like or don't like and check in and see if you actually still feel that way, because it just, what it kind of does is sort of clear out your brain's disk cache, if that makes any sense, where you just sort of like, oh yeah, actually, I don't feel that way anymore. I can redistribute that. And then it just kind of frees up RAM. I don't know how else to say it, but it just, it does really work. And I've been surprised at things that I thought I believed that I was like, oh, I don't really think that anymore.
When I did, I have a small role in The Company You Keep, this Robert Redford film. And, I was playing an FBI agent trying to catch these fictional members of the Weather Underground. And I didn't have a lot of time to do research. It was kind of a last-minute thing that you just go, yes, let's please make that work. Let me please work with Robert.
Sure.
So I remember being on a plane and watching the Weather Underground documentary. And I would just, when something would hit a chord with me, I would pause the movie and write down a counter-argument from the point of view of a conservative, which was, like, fun and uncomfortable. You know, because it's not necessarily how I felt, but it was a really interesting.
I think that's more than most people do.
Part of my brain to access for the movie and just for me personally. You know, I wish I could do that. I wish I could, like, the next time I'm having an argument with somebody, I wish I could just hit pause and just try and think about, you know, where they're actually coming from instead of just how I feel.
Sure.
Except that when I'm having an argument with someone, I'm just being annoying and thinking of, you know, the best way to break down their argument.
Well, yeah, but that's, you know, unfortunately, that's just sort of a basic premise of humanity that, you know, people will argue not in favor of the truth, but to support their own ideas.
Yeah.
And no matter what evidence is in front of them, like once they're sort of in that mode and their adrenaline's high and they sort of recede into the lower parts of their brain, you just can't. That's just where you are.
Somebody described it once as conversational chess, and I find like when somebody else can do that, I love having arguments with those kind of people because you stay like weirdly level-headed.
Yeah,
like like everything feels really still, and you're just kind of like you're. It's like, and what I mean by conversational chess is it's like you're thinking three moves ahead, so you don't have to say all the stuff you both already know.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. it's like, you know, you can just listen to somebody and go, okay, I see. I think what you're saying is this. And then, you know, and that's so fun. And I feel like you learn so much more quickly that way.
Well, because it forces you to think. Like, it forces you to think about what you're saying when you
But arguing with somebody who's good at arguing, I just go nuts. Because I'm not great at arguing, but, like, I'll just throw as much shit at the wall to see what will stick. So.
Are you a, and this might be a little personal, so you don't have to answer this. Are you like a rah 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 arguer, or do you get silent and withdrawn, or are you like I'm leaving? Or
it's, I guess it just depends on the other person.
Sure.
I think, you know, the people that I argue like rah 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 with are tend to be people who don't stay in my life that long.
Sure.
Because, you know, I think that says something about the way that we interact. So the people that are in my life but that I do argue with, it does seem to be like a much quieter argument. And but yeah, I mean, I dated very, you know, briefly, I dated a stand-up who just like knew how to push my buttons. And, like,
we are a very complicated bunch.
So ugly. And like, and he was good at arguing in that way that I'm not. So like, you know, I would just kind of like laugh at the absurdity of the argument we were having sometimes. And it would just be like, oh, this is funny to you. It's like, that's not fair. You can't do that. That's not what I, of course this isn't funny to me. And you know, it's not, you're just saying that to make you seem like the victim.
That is definitely a downside to dating a comedian, is that we deal with hecklers. We overanalyze, we break everything down, and we try to see every possible angle on a thing. And so we can get into that mode where we hammer away until the other person is just like, I fucking quit.
I'm a shell of a human being.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, yeah.
You know, just because that's sort of.
Honey, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all of it.
I think some people listening may know what I'm talking about. but yeah, that's a comics are we're kind of a pain in the ass to date. We really.
Genuinely so.
We really are. So I apologize on behalf of all.
No,
you know,
no,
comedians.
No. That's okay. I think, honestly, I think it was more specific to him than the profession.
Yeah.
I'd like to think.
Was it Carrot Top?
Damn it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
sorry.
Personal.
You just wanted to create a race of gingers. I understand. I totally understand. No. Well, I, what if that was it? And she was like, I can't.
I, that's, of course not.
why are you crying?
This interview is over.
There's something in both of my eyes. Well, we're about at the end of the hour, but you're so delightful. I honestly, please come back on the podcast anytime.
I would love
you don't
to.
Even have to promote anything. Just fucking come on and talk about
but
movies
you
or something.
You should bring the Ant-Man footage.
So stop it. We already hammered her about that.
Just saying, it might help, Bob.
Stop it.
You want to see it too.
Shut the fuck up. I have to play bad cop right now. Do you understand how this out works? Am I saying this out loud? So we don't have a telepathic link.
So his nose starts to bleed and he just starts speaking his monologue. He'll be back in 5. Like, let's get you a water. He'll be back.
Oh, one last question I want to ask you. This is what I'm wanting to ask you the whole time. And I kept thinking about other things. Do you think you seem to have a creator's mind? Are you going to write and produce and direct and create stuff?
It's, yeah. I mean, honestly, you know, when you're on a film set, I think you have to be a special kind of crazy to be a director.
I think it sounds like an awful job.
Yeah, no. And when you're on a film set, you see like what they go through.
Sure.
And I just, you know, and it's not like acting, you know, it's, you devote 2 years of your life to one thing. And if that one thing is a disaster, and, you know, and even sometimes you can see it and it's too late and you don't know how to kind of right the ship, I just can't imagine what that feels like. So, you know, I guess it seems too terrifying to me to tackle, but maybe I'll become one of those people who, like, faces their fears, but I don't feel like that person right now.
You still got a lot of acting to do. There's still a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I just said that like a grandfather. You got a lot of acting to do. Do you and your friends get together for acting?
Like when you worked on the Redford thing, did you just sort of watch them and go like, all right, so how did you transfer from this to this?
Yeah,
and sort of see,
yeah,
like,
and you know, and the interesting thing is, it was a famous director too, and of course I can't think who it was, but There was a director who said, I don't know why more actors aren't directors, because they actually get the benefit of working with so many different directors. Directors just work with themselves.
Oh,
I mean,
that's
maybe
interesting.
Maybe they do a set visit every now and then, but I've seen a lot of different directors work. And yeah, you'd think that from that I would be like, oh, okay, I get it. But, you know, I know that there are certain directors who want to play stuff really close to the vest, and so you don't really know what the grand plan is sometimes. And then there are directors who kind of tell you every detail of their plan, like it's a Bond movie or something.
And they're a villain.
They're kind of like congratulating themselves on all the clever things they've done.
Oh,
which
so
is
they,
also a really interesting
thing. They just want you to be like, that's brilliant.
Like, oh, I never even, oh, and that's why visually you've done this. Well done, you.
And that is why I am a puppet master.
So I don't know. I feel like it would be a really interesting exercise to direct actors, but then at the same time, I would feel really uncomfortable doing it. I don't know. I think I'd just have to wake up one morning with some idea that was so interesting to me that I thought I will ruin my life for 2 years to maybe have nothing to show for it just to explore this idea, you know?
You're going to direct a movie with Jake and Maggie Gyllenhaal, and you're going to make them make out. Because... As a
what?
Oh, I'm the only one. I'm the only one. It's just me.
Like, I was trying to think of like some kind of like witty thing to say to that.
I just turned into space dicks.
Like, I was like, oh, and then my banter is to say this. No, 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 no. What is wrong with you?
That is fair. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know what's wrong, but I do, maybe I'll cut that out.
No, don't.
Nah, fuck it. I'll put it in.
Keep it.
Okay, okay. You're the guest if you think I should keep it. But thank you for doing the podcast.
It's
know.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
I don't know if you live on this side of the country, but if you don't and you have limited time, that was nice of you to sit down with us for over an hour.
It was my pleasure.
Oh, we'll see you again soon. Enjoy your breed, everybody.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now, in hardcover or digital editions, wherever you get your books.